It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. Broadcasting on 100.1 FM is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is snowing 33 degrees. At the airport, they are showing 100% humidity. They have north winds at 6 miles per hour and 1.5 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for snow until 3 p.m., followed by snow showers. Northwest winds to 15, gusting to 20. Snow showers until midnight or so. Sunny skies tomorrow. Coming up on the Midday Report, Alaska Republicans will vote on Tuesday in their presidential preference poll. Tribal leadership honored civil rights leader Elizabeth Peratrovich in a ceremony on February 16th. And musher Dallas Seavey ran into a moose on the Iditarod Trail. The moose got the worst of it. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Millions of people are selecting potential presidential nominees today. Contests are being held in 16 states and the territory of American Samoa. NPR's Sarah McCammon says today's voting blitz is normally decisive in presidential primaries.
This is not a typical Super Tuesday. It's no surprise that the incumbent president, Joe Biden, is the all but official nominee for Democrats. Republicans are in the unusual position of being poised to make former President Trump, who faces multiple criminal charges, their party's inevitable nominee. So far, Trump has prevailed in every Republican nominating contest except the District of Columbia. Former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley won there on Sunday, becoming the first woman ever to win a Republican primary contest. Despite struggling to gain traction, Haley has continued fundraising and campaigning ahead of today's voting when hundreds of delegates are at stake. She's declined to say what she'll do after Super Tuesday voting ends. Sarah McCammon, NPR News, Norfolk, Virginia.
Independent Senator Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona says she will not seek a second term, intensifying the battle for control of the U.S. Senate. Sinema blames the political climate for her decision to bow out. But the former Democrat faced a difficult re-election fight in a state that has increasingly turned against her style of lawmaking since she was first elected. The Dartmouth men's basketball team has voted to join a union, becoming the first unionized team in college sports. NPR's Andrea Hsu reports the election was held just hours before the team's final game of the season.
The 15 players on the basketball team voted 13-2 in favor of joining the Dartmouth College Employees Union. Dartmouth had tried unsuccessfully to halt the election, arguing that the basketball players are students foremost and not employees and should not be afforded the right to unionize. Today, Dartmouth asked the National Labor Relations Board to overturn the decision to hold the election in the first place. Meanwhile, 6'6 forward Cade Haskins says the team has been talking to lots of other college athletes about unionizing.
So I think this is just the start. I think this is going to domino effect other cases across the country.
In the Ivy League and beyond. Andrea Hsu, NPR News.
Sharp sell-off on Wall Street as technology stocks tumbled. Here's NPR's David Gura.
Some of the big names that have led markets to recent highs in recent days plunged, including Apple and Microsoft. Well, they're part of a group of stocks that have been driving most of the market's gains, known as the Magnificent Seven. Shares of semiconductor designers and manufacturers also sagged. Bitcoin briefly notched a new high, eclipsing a record it set more than 2 years ago. But it didn't take long before the price of the volatile cryptocurrency fell by about 10%. David Gura, NPR News, New York.
We see the Nasdaq was down 267 points, or 1.6%. At the close, the S&P fell more than 1%. The Dow is also down more than 1%, or more than 400 points. It's NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Alaska Republicans can vote Tuesday for a presidential nominee in the party-run poll. Donald Trump, Nikki Haley, and Vivek Ramaswamy are on the ballot. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin tells us what we need to know about the Republican presidential preference poll.
This isn't a traditional state-run election. It's organized by the party. The polls will be open from 3 to 8 p.m. Tuesday at nearly two dozen sites around the state, mostly churches and community centers. Trump Alaska campaign chair Kelly Chewbacca says she's striving to get a good turnout for Trump to guard against any move Haley might make to convert delegates to win the Republican nomination.
One of the theories out there is that there will be a real effort at the national convention to do a procedural play or an overthrow play to try and get delegates to vote for her. And so we want to make sure that we have a really strong, if not a unanimous, showing for Trump for delegates.
Meanwhile, Haley's Alaska campaign is working the phones to boost turnout for the former South Carolina governor. Haley state co-chair Art Hackney says he's hearing hostility from Trump supporters that Haley is even running.
And as long as she's got money and people expressing support, she has every right to go forward and continue campaigning. And then it has every right to play itself out, because we don't know how anything's going to end. We never do in politics.
To vote in what's officially called a presidential preference poll, voters have to be registered Republicans. State Party Chair Ann Brown says Alaskans can register or change their registration on site and still participate. She says voters just need to bring a driver's license or other official photo ID. The volunteers at polling sites will verify eligibility by looking up the voter registration records. Ramaswamy dropped out of the race in January and endorsed Trump, but Brown says the party has no mechanism for removing him from the ballot. The party expects to report results on its social media pages, with final results coming on March 11. The presidential preference poll determines how Alaska's 29 delegates to the National Republican Nominating Convention will be awarded. Communities in western Alaska, the North Slope, and House District 2 in Southeast have no polling sites. Brown says the preference poll is run by volunteers, and that limited where the party could set up a voting site. As for Alaska's Democrats, they'll have the chance to choose their presidential nominee April 13. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Tribal leadership honored civil rights leader Elizabeth Paratrovich at a ceremony in Wrangell on February 16th. The Alaskan Native Sisterhood Camp No. 1 and the Tlingit and Haida Community Council gathered at Wrangell's Nolan Center. On February 16, 1945, the Alaska Territorial Legislature passed the Anti-Discrimination Act. Paratrovich, with the support of the Alaska Native Sisterhood and the Alaska Native Brotherhood, delivered strong testimony for unity. KSTK's Colette Czarnacki has this audio postcard featuring a couple of online speakers from Petersburg, dancers from Wrangell, and attendees at the event.
I am Nicole Hollingstead, born and raised and proud hometown girl of Petersburg, Alaska, which is one of our five landless communities. We're thrilled to be able to share our progress with all of the participants here, honor those who have gone before us, as Elizabeth Paratrovich did, with strength and grace.
I'm Bobby Brock. This is, I think, the first time it's been public. Yeah, so it was really nice. It's nice to have people join in and celebrate our culture.
My biggest name is Cleo Jugu. I am Raven of the Bingtan clan. I come from Freshwater Mark Sockeye House. My name is Cecilia Tavallaro. I was born in Cape, grew up in Petersburg. Elizabeth Paratrovich fought for civil rights. She fought fiercely for our Native community. We acknowledge that land is a part of who we are, and the return of our land signifies a return of our people.
I'm Betty Newman.
Long time ago, she fought for us.
It's really good.
We know more than we know if we grew up with the language.
We're going to do the language chat for you. Yay! Boop.
My name is Hannah Ettengoff Hoyt. For me, it's like, it just kind of like goes blank. Like all I hear is the drum. All I hear is the songs, the words, you know, the beat. And I'm just looking at the person in front of me usually and just kind of following them. And then you get out in front of the people you're dancing for. And it's just this moment of this like reflection of the people who taught you how to dance. The people who, you know, maybe aren't dancing with you anymore, so you're dancing for them.
My Tlingit name is Wooshkika.
My name is Lua. I just go, and then I just run to my
working place. On patience and staying in line and standing still. I think that dancing is like a combination of healing and grounding. And I would say like it just feels very natural, and having your children dance with you just like amplifies that feeling. Today is a learning day, right? It's a day to take a pause and to remember how far we've come and how far we have to go, but also to make sure that we're teaching.
Elizabeth Piratchevich Day was established in 1988 by the Alaska Legislature. Top 2024 Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race contender Dallas Seavey shot and killed a moose early Monday, about 100 miles into the 1,000-mile race, according to Iditarod officials. Seavey's team was between the Svenkna and Finger Lake checkpoints when the moose, quote, became entangled with the dogs and the musher on the trail, according to a statement from the Iditarod. The statement says Seavey shot the moose in self-defense and notified race officials about it about 1:45 a.m. on Monday. When he arrived at the Finger Lake checkpoint about 8 a.m., Seavey was forced to drop a dog who had been injured in the encounter. Race rules allow Iditarod mushers to carry firearms for just such an occasion, but they must stop to gut any big game animal they shoot so it can be salvaged. The rules also say that any mushers who come upon a fellow competitor in the process of gutting a game animal must stop and help. They're not allowed to pass until the musher who killed the animal has continued on the trail. Rosemary Rosie Porter was a fierce advocate for the people of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta and a pioneer in Western Alaska journalism. She died in Anchorage earlier this month at 85 years old. KYUK's Evan Erickson has more about Porter's legacy and what her Tundra Drums newspaper meant for the region.
Rosemary Porter, known as Rosie to most, moved to Bethel in 1974, where she quickly found work at KYUK developing educational and news programming, as well as editing a weekly KYUK newspaper and program guide called the Tundra Drums. When KYUK came under fire for violating federal public media guidelines with the Tundra Drums, Porter saw an opportunity. She bought the paper and set up shop in a small space at Lean's Lodge, a two-story roadhouse on the Bethel riverfront prone to flooding that has since been demolished. One of Porter's friends from the time, Robin Barker, recalls the importance of the newspaper in its early days.
She really started that newspaper from nothing, you know, from a little mimeographed sheet. And it was a really critical time for news for people in Bethel and in the villages, because things were happening fast.
With Porter at the helm, the Tundra Drums thrived. Porter told the Alaska Dispatch in 2011 that at one point the paper had as many as 20 employees and put out the largest weekly newspaper in the state, at 48 pages or more. Friends say Porter had an eye for cultivating talented reporters. Richie Goldstein, who wrote for the Tundra Drums from 1979 to 84, originally came to Bethel to work as a teacher, but was soon working for Porter.
And Rosie said, well, just come to work for me. So Friday was my last day at school, and Monday I was the editor of the Thunder Drums.
Goldstein says Porter was generous to a fault.
In 1980, I think it was, she took the entire staff and a bunch of other people, maybe 10 or 11 of us, on a two-week trip to England.
Porter also spent the money she made flying reporters to villages to cover critical issues across the region. In 1984, she even sent Goldstein to file stories and photos for the 1984 Summer Olympics in Los Angeles.
It covered Greco-Roman and judo and fencing and weightlifting.
Another reporter who Porter sought out was Bethel resident Beverly Hoffman, who worked part-time for both KYUK and the Tundra Drums in the mid-70s. Hoffman credits Rosie with showing her the ropes and inspiring her as a journalist.
She just covered so much, and she wasn't afraid. Like, I mean, my gosh, she would print the salaries of every state employee person and write, you know, honest stories about what was going on. And I thought, wow, this is one powerful woman dealing with, you know, powerful men and issues way back then.
Mary Lenz, who came to Bethel to cover the first running of the Kuskokwim 300 sled dog race in 1980 for the Associated Press, ended up working for Porter on and off for a decade.
Rosie combined the best of concern for community, a dedicated journalistic experience, and a lot of fun. She made things fun.
According to her friends, Porter's editorial style was also fun, if not outright edgy at times. One memorable headline using the Yupik word for excrement, Governor Anux on Bethel, is said to have gotten the attention of then-Governor Jay Hammond and reversed a decision to veto funding for the YK region. In 1990, Porter sold the Tundra Drums to the Chilista Corporation, calling it quits after 15 years at the helm to pursue other ventures, including indulging her lifelong love of travel. Porter died peacefully in Anchorage on March 1st and is survived by her children, Kendall Larson and Gregory Porter. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
The U.S. Department of Energy announced over $125 million to be distributed to five rural Alaska energy projects earlier this week. As KOTZ's Desiree Hagen reports, the largest chunk of funds is headed to the Northwest Arctic for a giant renewable energy effort that will affect the entire borough.
Nearly $55 million. That is the amount of Department of Energy funds coming to the Northwest Arctic through the Energy Improvement in Rural or Remote Areas program. And on top of that, the regional native corporation NANA and the Northwest Arctic Borough will contribute another $10 million to the project. Ingemar Mathiasen is the energy manager for the Northwest Arctic Borough. He says those funds will help bring solar arrays, heat pumps, energy batteries, and transmission lines to the region. Mathiasen calls the borough's renewable energy plan, now 15 years in the making, a success story in energy sovereignty for all of rural Alaska.
We are pretty much spearheading the change of what all the Alaska communities need to do. It'll be the biggest project we have done, and everybody's looking forward to it.
Mathiasen says he's excited about the arrival of the new heat pumps, which will dramatically cut residents' heating fuel consumption. Communities with solar already, like Shugnak, Noatak, Buckland, and Deering, will see their energy output double. Once a community's solar arrays are set up, Mathiasen says all households in the villages will receive heat pumps.
The household can save up to $1,500 or $2,000 per year going electric instead, since the heat pumps are three times more effective than a Toyo stove going through electricity. The key to all that, of course, is that we want to have solar arrays and batteries in place before we do it, so that the batteries will take up any kind of excessive power that we're putting into the communities.
Mathiasen says the renewable energy improvements would save the region millions per year. The borough plans to help communities to set up independent power producers, or IPPs, basically an entity like the village tribe, owns the power plant and all the energy it produces. The IPP would then be reimbursed by Alaska Village Energy Cooperative, or AVEC, for the diesel that they aren't using. The village is able to use that extra income for anything they would like. Mathiasen says this could be spent on community needs like education or infrastructure. The community of Shugnak has already earned over $100,000 from the IPP model. And when the new solar arrays and heat pumps come into the picture, Mathiasen says the profits could be even higher.
Combined impact would be about offset of about 500,000 gallons of fuel that we don't need, plus an income to the IPPs of about $1 million plus every year.
For some in the villages up the Kobuk River, where diesel fuel is about $10 per gallon, that could mean savings of hundreds of thousands of dollars per year in offset fuel. Another project the grant would fund is inner tie lines between Shugnak, Kobuk, and eventually Ambler. This could help build out a future hydroelectric project that Mathiasen says would almost completely power those communities with renewable energy. The DOE grant funds will also help build a large energy storage battery in Kotzebue. The battery would provide uninterrupted power for hours to the city's more than 3,000 residents if the diesel generation plant goes offline. Borough Assembly member Craig McConnell praised Mathiasen and his department's work.
This is major. This is not major. This is like a nuclear bomb, a good nuclear bomb. This is, if there is such a thing. I mean, it's that big. This is 4 years of jobs that we need to keep as much of this 55 million in our region as possible, especially in the villages.
Mathiasen says the borough and their partners hope to begin working on the project as soon as possible and hope to finalize all the grant paperwork in the next month. He believes the project will take about 4 years to complete. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
Credit card late fees should be no more than $8, says the Biden administration. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute. The average credit card late fee today is $32 that will come down dramatically under a new rule imposed by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. It takes effect in about 2 months. Sales at Target fell during the holiday season, but its profit margins improved as it had to cut prices less than it did a year ago. The retailer reported a 58% increase in fourth quarter profit. It expects sales to improve later this year. Yemen's Houthi rebels are continuing attacks on cargo ships heading to and from the Red Sea. Over the weekend, one ship sank. Three underwater telecommunications cables were also cut, but the Houthis denied responsibility. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the fifth day of March, the year 2024. The sun rose at 7:50 today. It will set again at 6:51, giving us 11 hours and 1 minute of glorious daylight. That is a gain of exactly 5 minutes compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 50 degrees, set in 1944, and our record low is 2 degrees, set in 1971. Currently 34 degrees. It is snowing and foggy and misty. At the airport, they are showing 1.5 miles of visibility and northwest winds to 3 miles per hour. They're calling for the snow to continue until about 4 this afternoon, followed by snow showers. High near 37 today with northwest winds to 15, gusting to 20. Snow showers tonight, tapering off, northwest winds to 20, maybe 20 to 5 in the evening, could gust as high as 40 tonight. And sunny skies tomorrow, high near 37, northwest winds to 20, becoming light and variable in the afternoon. We have an outgoing tide Our next low tide here on the east side will be at 4:25 this afternoon and be 0.8 feet, followed by a high tide at 11:29 p.m. of 5.5 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 4:48 p.m. and be 1.3 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 11:30 p.m. of 9.7 feet. Mariners, be aware, we do have a small craft advisory through Wednesday from Marmot Island to Sitkanak. Look for west winds to 30 knots this afternoon, seas to 7 feet. Northwest 30 tonight, seas to 7 feet. And for tomorrow, west 25 in the morning, becoming variable 10, 7-foot seas diminishing to 4 feet tomorrow afternoon. Over in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning today. Northeast 25 becoming north 35 this afternoon with 10-foot seas. For tonight, northwest 30, 8-foot seas subsiding to 5 feet after midnight. And for tomorrow, on our west side, west winds at 15 knots, seas to 3 feet. The health or the Women's Bay Service Area Board will be having their regular meeting. The Women's Bay Service Area Board will be having their regular meeting in the Women's Bay Fire Hall at 5:30 p.m. today. Also today, the Assembly and School Board will be having a joint work session in the School District Conference Room at 6:30 p.m. On Thursday, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having its regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All these meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough's website. Please contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. And don't forget, assembly meetings are live-streamed on the Kodiak Island Borough YouTube channel. If you subscribe, they'll send you live-stream notifications. The Kodiak Area Mentoring Program is offering community workshops on addiction and recovery with an emphasis on methamphetamines as well as fentanyl and other opioids. The workshop is designed for friends and families of substance abusers as well as service providers and just concerned community members. The next session will happen Saturday, March 9th from 11:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Kodiak Area Mentoring Program's physical location, which is next door and upstairs from AT&T. A short activity and question and answer session will follow each, and a light lunch is provided. Again, that's 11:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. That's happening Saturday, and the location is next door and upstairs from AT&T, the Kodiak Area Mentoring Program Camp. March Gladness is coming. It's a concert series from Isle Bells. If you love that sound, you can hear them on Sunday, March 10th at 4 p.m. at the Canna Marketplace. They will also be playing Saturday, March 30th at the Auditorium's Choral Pod at 4 p.m. But this Sunday, March 10th, it's the Isle Bells March Gladness, 4 p.m. at the Canna Marketplace. Be there or be square. The community garden meeting is happening. The Kodiak Soil and Water Conservation District will teach you things about bed prepping methods, mulching, tillage, seed starting, as well as garden planning, work party, and cleanup planning. That's all happening at the Touch Tank on Near Island. That's at 301 Research Court in the main meeting room, Thursday, March 14th. That's going on between 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. Let's grow community together. For more information, call them at 907-486-5574. The Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak are putting on a grief recovery method program. It's an 8-week grief group. Learn effective tools for how to process feelings of pain and loss while also learning how to live with grief in a manageable way. It'll be done in an interactive and supportive environment with grief specialist Juliana Belden. Classes begin March 21st, and they go from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m., and they are happening at the Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center. Pre-registration is required. You can register at www.hpck.org or call them at 907-512-0600.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.